We've got an action-packed episode for you today. We are going to be talking about conversion rate optimization, how to get more of those users that are landing on your site, converting and buying products, and most importantly, becoming lifetime value customers.
Welcome to the Winning with Shopify podcast. This is the podcast to help you scale your Shopify store into a money-making machine. This episode is brought to you by OmniSend, trusted by more than 80,000 Shopify brands just like yours. Everything you need to scale your email marketing and ROI. Send emails, newsletters, and SMS. Build your email list with landing pages and pop-ups. One-click Shopify integration. Get 24/7 email and live chat support all with OmniSend. Now, over to your host, Nick Truman.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Winning with Shopify podcast. If it's your first time tuning in, it's such a pleasure. It's the first time you've probably heard my voice in your entire existence. Welcome to the show. If you've been tuning in for a while, great to have you guys back. Great to talk to so many of you guys as well. I shouted a few of you out recently, and I've had emails which genuinely started with, oh my gosh, you mentioned me. If you want to get in touch, check out winningwithshopify.com. Send us a message, ask us a question, or just tell us that you love the show. Whatever platform you're listening to this on as well, please do hit the subscribe button if you haven't. Even if you're never going to listen to an episode again, that does help us out, and the platforms won't like me saying that. But do give us a review, and we hope you do want to tune in every week. We post every single Friday, and I hope you like me because I host every single episode, apart from I think one in the last 3 years. But pleasure to have you all tuning in. We've got an action-packed episode for you today. We are going to be talking about conversion rate optimization, how to get more of those users that are landing on your site, converting and buying products, and most importantly, becoming lifetime value customers. So buying again and again and again and again and again and so on. Joining me for a second time, he's been on the show before, is an absolute legend, a really good friend of mine called Ben, who's from a brand and web agency called 11. So Ben, welcome to the show.
Hello, Nick. Hello. Thanks for having me again. It's great to be back.
Yeah, well, this isn't going to be the only time, is it? We're going to have you on again in a few weeks, which I'll talk about in a second. But go on, yes. Ben, give us a quick overview. Tell us about yourself. Yeah, sure. Tell new people what you do.
Yes, my name is Ben. I run the agency called 11, branding and web agency, specifically working on Shopify, as you'd expect me being here, having a chat. We are very much in that space for lifetime value. We marry the brand through to the conversion rate optimization in terms of web design and development. And that's really much our sweet spot. So yeah, hope to provide a lot of good insight on this chat, but not too much, like you say, because we've got a webinar coming up that's going to dive into this in a much more greater detail.
We have indeed. We have. So if anyone's listening to this, so quickly check the calendar and see what day it is. If it's before the 30th of April, then you've got an opportunity to come and meet Ben and meet me. Not face-to-face, unfortunately, but video-to-video. We are running a webinar on Zoom. There's an Eventbrite link in the description below. Or if you want to find it, go and search Spec Digital in Eventbrite or message one of us and we can certainly help you out. If you're listening to this after the 30th of April, then there'll be a recording of Ben and I talking about it. The main advantage of coming is that we always finish our webinars with at least 30, if not sometimes 45 or more minutes, where you can ask questions. So there'll be questions submitted when you sign up to the event, and we'll be shouting you guys out saying, someone submitted this question. And also we're going to have questions live on the webinar itself as well. Now, the most important thing when that webinar links into today is the webinar is going to be a couple of hours long, and we're going to go really deep into stuff, probably do some screen shares and potentially even create something off the back of it as well to send you guys to say, like, these were the 10 things that we think every brand should do and why and what they do on your site, or the 10 CRO things to really focus on. But today, we're going to start with the first three on this episode. So you guys are going to get a sneak peek into what we're going to be talking about. And naturally, we're going to give you three really good ones, but the real gold you're going to have to come to, because I wouldn't be in sales and marketing if I didn't say something till later. So before we dive into our top three tips for today and things you can go and play with before that webinar as well, before we do that, Ben, we're going to have a quick chat about CRO, because some people are going, oh gosh, not CRO again. Other people are going to be thinking like, oh my gosh, I've done CRO. It's so boring. Or it was incredible. Like, what's next? They're chomping at the bit. You guys might want to fast forward or just kind of skim through this next stage. But for people who don't know what CRO is, or perhaps do know what it is, have worked in it a lot, but maybe aren't thinking about it in the right sort of way, give us a quick overview. Like, what are we talking about when we talk about optimizing a conversion rate?
Yes. I mean, there's a lot to unpack in that question, because CRO is a very wide kind of landscape to work within, but ultimately we're looking at that funnel of users from, you know, brand awareness through to conversion. And we want to get those customers moving through your website, that funnel, through to checkout. And ultimately, there are so many idiosyncrasies which are going to help those customers convert through that process. And it's going to be so unique to your brand and your product. So, you know, education, first and foremost, for those new customers coming in and understanding that those new customers are probably going to come back again later. So it's not going to be a first time conversion there. But then as we're getting through to the business end of the funnel, where we're, you know, getting those products for those customers into the checkout, it's making sure that they've got all of that kind of information to hand that covers everything from delivery to the product setup, you know, information required in that checkout. The other triggers in terms of, can we add more into that basket? You know, are they buying product X? Does it really need to work with product Y? Can we get that in there? Can we incentivize them to do this? You know, are they going to be dropping out? Are they going to be shopping around cheaper prices or similar brands offering something that's slightly different in the proposition? Why you versus them is always a big piece.
Yeah.
And yeah, as I say, that journey, there's so many things you can tweak. Yeah, people can get hung up in tweaking lots and lots of small things. We very much try and look at it as from a holistic point of view. For example, you could change the color of your buttons. You could change the organization of the content on your product page. You can move the estimated delivery or price per can, for example, into different positions. Reviews, you know, are they easily accessible? The list goes on and it can get overwhelming. Hopefully we're here to like remove that and make this a bit more of a digestible piece. Yeah. But ultimately, conversion rate optimization is many things in terms of looking at that website, the kind of pain points you probably initially are experiencing, and then moving past that low-hanging fruit into the more longer-term objectives. Because some things, most of these things, aren't overnight successes. It does take a bit of, you know, understanding for a longer-term view. There are definitely some quick fixes for sure, which we'll probably go into in a bit. But ultimately, it's a big holistic view, probably page by page, funnel section by funnel, of getting people through to checkout. And ultimately, importantly, getting them to come back again at a very low cost. And then we want to get them to come back again for free. And then we got to be doing something right at that point to get them to come back.
Absolutely. And I've written down the kind of like a four-step process you've just gone through, which I think is fantastic. And I've got a really good point to make on this. And that's that you start with the education. So it's like, who's this brand or what's my problem as a consumer? What am I going to do? Then you've got the information stage, which kind of goes through the breadth of like, okay, I know what I want, but now I'm investigating, like, how much is it? Do I need to save up? Where am I going to get it from? How's it going to work? How do I use it? That sort of thing, which then leads people into like actually getting to the checkout. And then we get to lifetime value on the end. Now, those first two steps, from an SEO point of view, and I've been doing SEO on e-commerce brands for 16 odd years now, that education bit and the information bit, that's the bit I find that brands are just terrible at. And that tends to be, and this isn't one of the official tips for today, we'll come on to this in a minute, but I find that brands are so quick to go like, here's a product. What is this product? How big is it? How much does it weigh? When can we deliver it by? Who's it for? What devices does it work with? How long does the charge last? Whatever those different kind of features are. But the bit they miss is why somebody's going, why do I want to buy this camera? Why do I want to buy this camera in the first place? The reason they want to buy the camera is because they want to travel the world and document it. So actually, your branding is so off if they land on what I would describe, and I've written this down, I use this phrase a lot, is, we don't want brands to look like marketplaces. So Amazon and eBay are marketplaces. No one really knows much about, if we're brutally honest, the Amazon brand itself. It's just free next day delivery, isn't it? There's like nothing else really to it. Yeah. Whereas like if you go on a website that's selling, I don't know, we had a guy from Keep Candles on. I love using this as an example. With the CEO, Stephen, on, and Keep Candles, they exclusive scents. So the candle, the actual scent and smell of the candle is something that you can only get from them. They're completely unique and they kind of develop different scents. They get feedback on them. So you're part of this whole journey of voting on like which candle you like. That's a brand. When he sells that on Amazon, it's just the candle now. And it's this candle versus that candle versus that candle. And I think that education piece, the information about who we are as a company, writing FAQ guides, buying guides, but always, I think, and this is the other thing people forget when they do too much of that, is having that button at all times. Like, you know, like, oh, you're reading a guide about whether I should buy a pushchair or a pram. Well, here's a link to our pushchair range and here's a link to our pram range. And you can click one and go and purchase a product.
Yeah, I think, well, you definitely are touching into our first point. But yeah, it's funny. We had that exact conversation around Amazon versus direct consumer brand store only this week. And the brand made a good point. It's like, if we're going to be doing our web store, it's got to have a reason for being. You know, otherwise, we can just sell on Amazon and then, you know, people can still get our products. And the point of that is, like you say, there's a, that camera analogy is really good. You know, I buying camera for its tech, you know, great depth field and all these kind of bits versus why are you using it? And we can facilitate your like life experiences of traveling and capture those beautiful moments because we are brand X versus here's just like a list of like 50 different cameras, figure it out. And that's sometimes that's the tipping point.
And I think that's where GoPro have nailed it, isn't it? GoPro are really driving that kind of like go underwater with it. I mean, how many GoPro underwater videos have we all seen?
Yeah, exactly. It's positioning, right? It's that brand positioning. And that's a really tricky part to get right because you can overdo it as well. You can just completely overwhelm that customer with so much stuff. You know,
yeah, you don't want the customer wondering, like, what even am I buying here? Like, what is the product? And you're like, oh, it's a pair of shoes. After everything they've looked at. But certainly, I mean, as you say, like, we should bring this in now. So point number one, or certainly CRO action number one, that is something you brought up, Ben. Tell us more about this. So solution positioning is what you called it earlier, before we hit record.
Yeah, so solution positioning or a problem solution kind of activation. Mm. Ultimately, we kind of go through a process when doing any redesign, optimization on a website. And we want to know from the top of the funnel, the brand awareness, why people are coming to you and what product is essentially the solution you have for customers' problems. And so we look at it from a problem point of view, and then we go, right, we've got a solution for you. And that can start at the brand awareness stage, particularly on core landing pages. So let's just say homepage, lots of traffic's coming in here. We want to, you know, top of funnel, explain, you know, where you are, what the range might be in a very simplistic view of, I need to improve my hydration, so there's this supplement for you, versus I need to calm down and there's this supplement for you. Oh, okay. So you're in that supplement space. You can help my like well-being. So it's get setting up that problem. Solution comes through in the product point of view. And then from there, this is the kind of more technical user experience point of view, is how do you start delivering that precise information, getting that person, that customer to choose that right product, ultimately understand, let's say, the supplement space. How often do I need to take it? How many will I need? You know, then we're talking, can we push them towards subscription? You know, great space to, you know, get that regular revenue coming into the business. And then also from that experience point of view, you know, making sure that a customer doesn't feel they're a bit trapped. If they're a first-time customer and they're trying this product out for the first time, you don't want to kind of lock them in. You want to give them that freedom from a subscription point of view to cancel, change their order, delay it for a month or two. That's a lot of information to get across in that journey. So we've had them into that homepage and then we start funneling them through. But ultimately, it all starts with positioning of your brand and how you're going to help that customer. And once they go, right, they've got a solution for me, I need to figure out what is the right piece of this puzzle, i.e., you know, the product. We've got like a range of 10 in. Now, how do we funnel them through? So that's the kind of gateway as we see it. But the gateway can change as well in terms of landing page. A lot of customers may already be at that solution stage where they go, we know what we want. I need to hydrate again, or I need to calm down, or whatever it might be. They're probably coming through a Google Shopping point of view. So they directly clicked on a product because it's, I don't know, a hydration product, or it's some other sort of product. And so then we're on this product page and we've still got to do the same type of work, but in a different method or different outcome. So rather than being more brand orientated, you know, we're very much down into that product. We're talking about the benefits, the USPs of this part. And again, clearly delivering that information for how it's going to help them and how these solutions are better than competition, ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've covered almost like the A to Z of like how to start, scale, and
very top level.
The only bit you didn't say is how to sell the business, I think. But it's good because I think having this as our first point, I think, is so key. And one of the reasons we put it at number one is this sets the tone for everything else because it really is the DNA of the business. I think something you touched on that's really, really, really interesting. I know your background is very much in UX design and how do you like, what's the main message, the second message, the third message, and how do we display that as a journey on a page? And then I remember you said a year or two ago, you said to me, one of the biggest challenges we get is like, there's a first big message on a page and you have to scroll to get to the second one, but no one's scrolling. Just put a little arrow in. But just every now and then just has a tiny animation and suddenly we're moving from point one to point two. And then people are like, oh, there's like 8 points here. And the points are really hard hitting to like what my problem as a consumer is. But I think the point I want to make really on this, what's the positioning of your solution? Or as you said, the sort of challenge and solution to this, or what your solution is to a customer challenge. Trying to get all of that, and we have this with SEO, into a design, like fitting that in the pixels on a screen, which have reduced, well, they've increased, but also reduced in physical inches and centimeters of size in terms of using a phone instead of a laptop. How do you guys, like, from a UX point of view in design, how do you like start to actually pull that down to go, it's now condensed? Like you said with the subscription, how do you tell customers like it's flexible without just putting the word flexible that's so subjective that someone goes, of course you're going to say that. But how do you like actually design something and also decide that that is one of the most important things to put forward kind of higher up on whatever page they've landed on?
Yeah, it's not easy, that's for sure. I mean, our process is pretty robust and we don't really deviate from it too much because it works. But ultimately, from a discovery point of view, let's say we're picking up with a new brand or we're already working with a brand, new products launched, we understand as much as possible. And it's a two-way street, that information flowing from the client to us and us back to the client. So we've just scraped this information and data and that then turns into wireframing. And ultimately, yeah, you've got a lot of content and we start wide and big and we just start stripping out less is more. And we get to that point with communication, collaboration, back and forth until that design challenge at that beyond the wireframing into the user interface is a bit more simplified because we've got rid of the fluff, we've got rid of the wastage, shall we say, and then, you know, we've got to keep accessibility in mind. We can't just shove everything on there and make it deadly small and people can't read it, or, you know, you've got to be careful with brand colors. You can't have like colors that are going to be inaccessible for anyone with sight issues. So keeping that in mind, the challenge is putting it into that hierarchy, as you mentioned, keeping it clear. And then when it comes to, did that position of that subscription module work? That's when you can start testing. There's some great apps out there that you can use for A/B testing that don't require a level of degree to actually to manage. And so there are some like low hanging fruit tests you can do. And then you've got like longer term tests as well, which are a bit more considered. But ultimately, I think you said it right at the beginning of this or before when we were chatting earlier, getting a hole in one is very unrealistic. I mean, it's in the name, it's conversion rate optimization. You're optimizing again, again, and again until you get an outcome and you can have multiple tests running at the same time. You'll have tests lined up once one finishes. And if one finishes with a result that was unexpected, your tests will change because of that one result. You've got information. But yeah, it's all about just making sure you've got all the information at hand. And then from our point of view, it's experience. We've been doing this for ages about what works. So we take a lot of lessons that we've done with existing brands and we've kind of retained that knowledge of, okay, well, when we did this, we saw that didn't work. We know that doesn't work. Let's not waste our time doing this here now. Let's move on to step two straight away. So you get that kind of benefit, that compounded learned lessons through the process.
Mm. And I think I love what you say about testing. And just to add a bit of context to that for anyone who's heard of this or not heard of it, done it, not done it. What Ben's talking about is what's called A/B testing, which is where you create multiple versions of literally the same page. And you can change the percentages of what percentage of people that land on that page see each different version. And from an SEO point of view, you don't want Google thinking you've got duplicate pages. So from an SEO point of view, you can also say to Google, like, you're banned from looking at anything apart from version A, which is probably the existing one that we're testing against. That's the benchmark. And then you're adding these different things in. And there's some great apps. Annoyingly, the best app was Google Optimize and it no longer exists. I don't know why. If anyone from Google is listening, like, please phone me. Like, I'll give you my mobile number. I want to know why you've got rid of it and when it's coming back. But yeah, you basically can just sort of drag stuff around, change the whole design of a page, change the USPs on it and go, now that we're displaying our products like this to 10% of our audience, that 10% are converting at twice the amount, which, as Ben says, it sounds great, but you've got to keep testing. it really frustrates me. And I've got better at giving a caveat to all the recommendations we make when we make them. But it frustrates me when a client says, we tried your idea and it didn't work, but thanks for the idea anyway. It's like, what do you mean you've tried it and it didn't work? You mean version one didn't work? Like, and okay. Which leads me to my next question on this as well, just on this solution positioning, because it's, as I say, it's such an important part of all of this. How do you find out what customers actually wanted or the why? Because you can see on Google Analytics, obviously, what they've done, but it won't tell you why they arrived at the site, what their problems were. So what do you guys do, or what do you get your clients to do, or what do your clients do to find out actually who the customer really is, what they really care about, and even like what they even use the products for is always quite fascinating, because it's rarely what you think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it changes with every different client. We would love, you know, an onboarding session to understand who the customer is. And actually that's becoming more and more regular, which is great to see and have that information provided. And that typically comes in the form of either the client doing it themselves or working with other people to go and speak to the customers directly and build up multiple profiles into one kind of perfect customer, should we say. And then, you know, everything's aligned around that person, likes, dislikes, all those kind of bits. That's really helpful. So that's kind of a true representation of the customer. From a direct contact to the customer, another great space, just go and look in the reviews. That's it. That's a really quick, easy one. Typically, a lot of reviews always revolve around delivery. And you get, obviously, like the negative reviews that kind of go, my parcel was delayed, or, you know, every parcel delivery driver gave it to next door and the dog ate it.
I call it the nutter test. All the negative reviews, whenever I'm looking at it from an agency and kind of e-com world, or I'm looking at it from a consumer world, is this person a nutter? And that's the end of the decision tree. There's just a yes and a no. And it's like, if no, move on. If they're not a nutter, read it. If they're clearly a nutter, as you say, like, yeah, my neighbor's dog attacked the postman while he was delivering it and broke my product. This brand's a one star. It's like, what? So what do you mean they're one star? Like, sounds like a you problem, mate.
But then you can sift through those and you can get, you know, this flavor's great. This made me feel awesome. You know, this, I don't know, elastic in the waistband was just perfect, not too tight. There's all of these little bits that you can start to go, okay, people love this, or that color is just getting great reviews and that color's not. So reviews, and then UGC, great space. You know, loads of great app providers in that space that will be able to scrape their content. You can obviously reuse it for marketing. But again, you'll get pretty honest reviews in that space. And I think that customers who are leaving video content, specifically reviews, are getting a bit more honest, I'd say. I think at the beginning when I saw this, it was always amazing reviews. They didn't want to hurt the brand. They wanted to get some free. But now the honesty is coming through a little bit more, which is great to see. And from a client's point of view, that's actually beneficial to help them, because otherwise they'll keep pushing out what's meant to be a 5-star product, and it's probably got some underlying issues they didn't know. So all of this really is like speak to that customer. It's a really important part of the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the last thing I'll add on that, I agree with all the points you made. There was just one that popped out, and this actually came from the B2B lead gen world, not e-commerce guys. But what it was is we were trying to get more leads in for a B2B company like 10 years ago. It's where I first learned this. And then we said to the company, like, what are we missing? We're getting the traffic to the site. They're looking for the thing you do, but they're not filling out a form. Something's missing. And we're looking on competitor sites, and we came to the conclusion they were missing whatever this thing is as well. There's something that's not being said that to you might, as the brand, might seem obvious, but to customers, it's not. So what we did is we actually sat the sales team down, and we even had to do this at like 6, 7 p.m. in the evening when they couldn't be phoning people and doing sales stuff because they were quite gung-ho, these guys. Anyway, we sat down and said, walk us through one of your pitch decks, was my idea. So they did. And I was like, none of that's on the website. And he was like, well, don't put too much on. I'll be out of a job. And I said, well, no, if we just put the top 2 or 3 things on there and say, to find out more, book a demo with us, book a call or whatever. By putting those 2 or 3 things on there, suddenly we were getting leads flying in. People knew what it was. They knew what it did, how it worked. And we were missing some of those core bits because it all just, to us who knew what the product was, it all seemed too obvious. So I'd say to e-com brands, talk to your customer service teams, or if you're a small brand, take a really close eye, as you say, Ben, like talk to your customers, take a really close eye what you get from those customers, be it positive or negative. And I say this a lot on the podcast, like just phone a load of them, email them, phone them, just say, hey, I'm the founder. I love that you bought my product, or you bought one of our new products. You're one of the first few to buy this product. Do you mind me asking, like, what was it for? What made you buy it? Where do you plan to use this? And if you've got half an hour, could we jump on Zoom? I'll give you $100, you know, gift card on our website or something. Like, go all out, meet them. You'll learn so much. We had this guy called John from Battlebox, who's actually, I'm going to announce either next week or the week after something quite fun we're doing with John, where you guys can come and meet him and ask him questions. But John was saying, like, he actually goes on Reddit, goes on the forums, sits in the customer service team, and they've got their own Netflix show. Like, these guys are doing hundreds of millions every year. And there's John, like, talking to customers, literally in the customer service team with a little headset on, just answering the phone, not saying he's the CEO to them, but just answering the phone and just going, like, and knowing what to do with it all and knowing how to help that customer. But he learns everything he needs to take back to the boardroom to say to his other directors, like, these are the issues, or like, customers are phoning up and having this problem, but the marketing team don't seem to want to solve it. Like, make it happen, fix it. We have to fix it. And because he's literally on the ground, he knows what all the issues are and he's got the authority to make the changes. So, really powerful, I think, doing stuff like that.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's brilliant. Yeah. Being able to, like, insert yourself into that space.
Yeah. Be like John. Be like John is my advice.
Yeah.
So point number two then. So this is one that I've raised, but Ben's going to chip in on this as well. We're going to go from Ben's point number one, like super macro, like who the heck are you anyway, right the way down to something quite micro, but I find makes quite a big impact on sites. So anyone looking for a silver bullet, this is not even a bronze bullet. There's no such thing, but it's good. So this one is using Google Analytics. If you go on GA4 and go into the e-commerce section, I can't remember the exact name, they keep changing, monetization section, go in there and have a look at the checkout performance or the user journey performance, I think it's called. And what it will do is it will show you how many people land on the site, how many people view a product, how many people add a product to cart, and how many people go into checkout, and final fifth step is how many people purchase. Go and look at that process and don't be too alarmed. Like, you're naturally going to have 96, 97%, even on a well-converting site. People are going to come in, bounce off, not do anything, like not really click around, et cetera, et cetera. There's always going to be a load of those guys. But it will show you how many people are adding to cart and then how many people that have already added to cart reach checkout. Now, this is a really significant part of people's journeys because on a lot of sites, and this gives all of you that are listening to this an opportunity to get ahead of your competitors, on a lot of sites, when you add to cart, not much happens. Like, the product obviously goes into cart and it just says added to cart, tick. On highly optimized sites, people that have worked with people like Ben or me or others in the industry, something will happen when you add to cart. Normally a few things will happen. Whether that's you suddenly display more information, the little pop out of the side appears and it's like, this has been added to cart and has recommended products or delivery information or warranty or a whole range of other things. I don't want to say too many because I know Ben's got some really good examples of this as well. But we literally managed to double the amount of customers on a site recently by making two tiny changes. Double the amount of customers that had added to cart that then entered the checkout. Because we were losing about 70 to 80% of them when they added to cart, didn't go into checkout. And we lowered that to like 35% of them now. We're going right the way through. So we managed to double the amount of people. No extra advertising costs, no big brand repositioning. We just did that bit. However, like you said earlier, Ben, I think you mentioned it a couple of times and I've probably mentioned it as well. It's like, it's all subjective to what your brand is. This brand in particular, the reason we came up with that recommendation sounds so simple is we initially used Hotjar, but we started using Microsoft Clarity recently, which is awesome and free. Who doesn't love something that's free? And it's a really good Microsoft product that shows you how people are using your website. And when they do things like, which we in the team here call rage clicking, to where you click on something that's not clickable and you see people have clicked like 8 times on that thing going like, why can't I click this button? And they think it's a button. So like, naturally make it a button. So it's really simple things like that. But we saw the amount of guys who'd like added to cart and then they just sort of pause for a second, nothing happens. So they click add to cart again, nothing happens. So they click it again, nothing happens. And they click on the cart and go, oh, there's three in there. And we saw loads of journeys like that. And we were like, okay, so A, it's not clear they've added to cart. B, some people didn't even click on the cart. They just left the site going, well, this site's broken, isn't it? And C, when we suddenly added all this reassuring, you should go and purchase this product now information or add more products to cart, like you said earlier, Ben, the whole process became quite slick at that point. Now, I know you mentioned, Ben, about that specific pop-out, the draw, you called it.
Cart draw.
When people add to cart. What are your thoughts on it? Like, what are some of the things you guys have done?
Yeah, I mean, you made some really good points there when if someone's adding to cart and nothing happens, it's not great. Obviously, you've seen the benefit of changing that. So yeah, I'm a big advocate for having the use of a cart draw. And you can have a cart draw also on mobile as well, which is a nice screen takeover. Add that product to cart draw, Great. You've got a visual of it in there. You can, it's got a nice little summary of what you've got. But then there's a great opportunity to upsell, increase that average order value. So we've been doing this. It's been quite a popular piece recently, increasing AOVs by complete the looks.
Yeah.
So you can use the out of the box Shopify algorithm to drive a complete the look, or take it in step further and you can really define completing that look in the cart drawer with the use of meta fields to, let's say you've got some leggings in there, let's add a bra or, you know, some accessories to complement that outfit you've already got together. And then other little tips and triggers in there, visualizing the delivery threshold. So you kind of want that, let's say that overview all in that cart drawer, you know, where am I going to get it? Is it going to cost me beyond the product, you know, the delivery cost to get it? Oh, is there a nice little threshold? If I add like £20 more into that basket, I've got free delivery. Great. And it's next day. Brilliant. So those little visual triggers that are psychological to help increase that AOV, they work really well. And yeah, that's, like you say, the optimized section of layering up in your store, all the way through to free gift for purchasing, which is very, very idiosyncratic for every different brand. For example, the product setup and the makeup and what's available to give away versus, you know, the margins, et cetera. Yeah. But having that in a, again, in a nice display in that cart drawer, how, and we've seen, you know, the uptake in that space has been phenomenal, really. So that's really interesting to see. But these are all, as I say, unique to each client. It may not work for every single brand, but there's, I think, a list like three or five or six different pieces in there. One or two of them will definitely work for everybody in some shape or form. So yeah, big fan of that space. And that's just one space of that small journey taking place that you can optimize.
And I think going back to my question to you earlier as well, like, it's so key we don't overclutter that UX. Like some carts, you open it up and then it kind of shuts. And I do this at home with my wife sometimes. Whenever I see her add something to cart and she shuts the cart immediately, I always say to her, like, just pause. Is that your first? And she knows, because I work in this, she's always like, oh, a quiz. So she said, oh, is there? And we make it fun. But she says like, oh, what are you going to ask me? And I'm like, was that the first thing you added? And she's like, yeah. It's the first time you've seen the cart page. Yeah. Tell me what was on it. Don't click back on it. Just tell me what was on it. And she doesn't remember any of it. Or she says, oh, I need another product to get free delivery. Because she's seen, like you kind of mentioned, I deliberately didn't say it because we do it a lot as well. And I was like, I know Ben's got this in his sleeve. But that loading bar, like you're $10 away from free delivery. And then once you get it, it's like you're now $100. So you got your first $100, you got free delivery. You're now $100 from next day's delivery or express delivery or something. Yeah. It's like that whole process. And if you don't want to devalue the brand with discounts and sales, saying free gift with every order over $200 today. And that free gift, and I'm just going to add something to your free gift one because I love that example. We have one brand on that did, like, I can't remember their exact name, apologies, but they were like glucose supplements. So like a lot of athletes take them and it's just like an instant hit of sugar. And they said whenever they have a new flavor, they send out a sample of it and they don't release the flavor for the first 3 months, but they send us one free sample of it out to every customer for 3 months. Then do an email to all of them going like, how was it? What did you find? So with the day they launch it, they have a ton of product reviews already. They have user generated content. And it's like, and I was like, that's so simple, but so smart. And they've given one supplement away for free. And because of the whole sensory, it's a great flavor. And they make sure, and he even said to me at one point, I can't remember if it was his guest or somebody else, but they said like, if there's our worst flavor, we deliberately send out the new one that we know is amazing when someone's ordered what we believe is our worst flavor, the one with the lowest reviews, the lowest repeat purchase rates and stuff, to basically go like, okay, you've had the gateway product. I nearly said drug. The gateway product, now go and get the good one. And I was like, it's such a smart way. But it also, from a customer point of view, like, there are some things brands do to like kind of trick customers and hook them in. It never lasts. They might order once, maybe twice for you, but they never last. These are fun. This makes marketing like a proper sort of, you know, the box arrives, and especially if the free one's wrapped, this was our gift to you. How long does it take to wrap something or just put one little bow around it? Like, or you can even buy the bows that stick on. You don't have to do anything. Literally just peel the back off and stick it like a sticker. And it's like, that's your free gift. And you just have that branded up in your way. And it's just lovely when the customer opens it and they get literally like opening a birthday present and they get this surprise. And I think it won't work for every brand though. You know, if you're sending a sofa and you put like a 10p packet of Haribo in, feels a bit of a mismatch. But if you send actually like, you know, here's 6 months worth of free leather wipes, to wipe the sofa down and keep it nice and clean. Yeah. What email are you going to send them in 5 months' time? Whoa, do you want some more of them leather wipes? They're good, aren't they? They're absolutely brilliant. And the whole time you've got an email story ready to say, like, you know, you should wipe your sofa down every 3 weeks. Have you done it recently? And, you know, we bought a mattress recently from my second one from your old employer, Ben Simba.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I'm getting emails now saying, like, have I rotated the mattress 180 degrees round? Have I turned it over at any point? To which I was like, oh no, because the day I got it, I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to keep this sofa really good as long as possible. I turned it over. I didn't tell the wife. And we both slept really well that night. And it's like, because we'd never slept on that side. It's like 10
o'clock.
And it was actually better. And in the morning, I didn't say anything. She was like, it's better. And I'm like, that's because I turned it over. And she's like, really? Yeah, it was that much better. And now we leave the other side underneath for a while. So it's all this stuff. Like, do you see how much, it's so much more than a product, guys. Like, you're not just trying to trick people into, like, add to cart, purchase, get through the thing and free delivery and 10% off today. It's actually the whole experience, the whole gamification, which I think leads in nicely to point number three. Why don't you kick us up on this one, Ben? We're going to talk about USPs and emphasize you in that, the unique element.
Yeah, I mean, USPs, they're sometimes overlooked and sometimes overdone, but ultimately that USP, like you say, it's got to be about the customer, how it's going to support them, help them. What is unique about this piece, you know, taking the mattress point of view, what makes it unique from a mattress point of view, you know, how you sleep in it. If you wriggle, does it like wobble your partner's side? You know, is it hot? Is it cold? All these different pieces are all part of the USP, and making sure they're placed in the right positions is so important. But also down to like service USPs as well. We spoke about these loads, obviously, today. You know, delivery, thresholds, giftings, discounts. They all go on and on. But you've got to have them in the right space. Not too many and not overwhelming. Particularly in that cart draw stage or adding to cart, you just don't want to be, you know, overwhelming that customer. And they're like you say, with your wife, do you remember it or did you not remember it? It needs to be nice and clean and considered at that point. Mm. But yeah, those USPs always got to come back down to that product. And then they are going to be the start of the journey in terms of building that lifetime value. I mean, this whole process is designed around that lifetime value. But in those USPs, it's going to be, like you say, they can follow up in an email, revolve that mattress around, or I've bought this supplement. How one of the other ways you could consume it daily, stick it in your breakfast or in your smoothie.
Yeah.
They can also be simple USPs across the website too. So yeah, there's a big section to unpack in that piece, and they're really important.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to make a few points. We'll come back to there was an example we were both sharing before we hit record and talk about it in a moment, to do with trees. Come on to trees in a minute.
Yes.
But
yes.
With the mattress, one point I made this to a client a while ago and then found myself saying it more and more. And I don't think I've ever spoken about this on the podcast at all. But my point to the client really is they started reeling off all these USPs and they said, well, that one's definitely unique. And I didn't deny it, but it didn't excite me. And I was like, the creative person in me, and you're way more creative than I am, Ben. I mean, you can actually draw stuff with a pencil, which is well beyond me. But I think the creative in me wasn't excited by this stuff. And the ones I was most excited by weren't unique and they weren't the best at them anyway. So I was quite honest with myself. I'm still struggling to think of like, what is something that we could, I don't know, put on a PR article in the news. And I kind of had this moment of someone going, that's it. If you could write a ton of PR about this USP, then it's probably unique and it's probably really compelling. And so with the mattress, for example, I was just trying to think when you were talking and looking at my notes about this PR point, what article could we put on a news website that is a bit clickbaity, everyone would click on, but your brand would be, Simba Mattress would be an obvious solution to that. And you could literally write something, there's a world phenomenon where people are sleeping better at night without changing a thing. Mm-hmm. That's quite an interesting article you want to read. You're like, I've got a bed, I sleep at night. Like, how do I do this? And then you read it and it says, you know, rotating the mattress round, flipping it over. Experts at Simba Mattress have learned X, Y, Z. I'm making this up, everybody. Like, that's not an article about Simba I read. But I've been looking at and doing more and more PR with our clients recently, certainly from an SEO backlinking perspective. We've got some really good agencies on it. If anyone wants to talk to them, they don't cost loads, but they can get some really good PR stuff. But it is literally that, I think, with the USP is like, is it something that I could put in the news to say, like, you know, like, how is the clothing industry, to bring it onto our idea of trees, how is the clothing industry supporting tree planting and CO2 emissions? Which is an interesting article because how many of us have read and seen pictures of like the rivers in China and Vietnam and some country where they're just running a bright colours from all the dye that's gone into our clothing. And we're the reason that's all happening. It's because we buy it. That's why they're doing it. So actually, a tree planting revolution, all thanks to clothing. It's quite an exciting title, isn't it? But Ben, why don't you give us your example about, we're talking about trees.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really interesting topic that gets us kind of quite motivated because obviously in the world of e-commerce, yeah, we are the problem in this. We've also got many solutions now, but it also can be a little bit gray around the edges about, for example, I'm planting trees. Did the money I give in that checkout process or the brand that I bought from who are pledging X amount percentage of planted trees, did it actually happen? That's the gray area because there's a lot of that can happen. But we've recently been talking to a great app called Verdant, and they have an opportunity for companies and individual users to essentially have the transparency of where those trees have been planted, which is great. It's kind of like a little mini Facebook feed in the app's ecosystem where you can go and look at any business, any brand, and see where they've planted. And there's images of that tree being planted in that space and the timeline of it growing. And you start to actually, you know, get a bit more tangible in terms of that benefit being given back. And then, I mean, there's loads of other kind of additions to that beyond trees around environmental sustainable governance, which brands can dive into much more. Mm-hmm. We work with a lot of B Corp brands, and they're doing some amazing things with people via the planet. And so, like you say, going back to that press piece, that's where the additional depth comes into something that's unique that will help you as a brand stand out against your competition. Yep. That then turns into your customers staying for a lifetime, hopefully, and being really invested. I mean, take a look at examples like the Patagonias, the Finisteres of the world. You know, they've harnessed that power really well by building a community, and they've got loads of, you know, unique points to talk about beyond their products and about how their business operates. And those aren't quick wins though, for sure. There are some, you know, immediate actions you can do from planting trees or giving back to good causes, but the next stages are really looking at that wider brand positioning and how you can benefit people and planet in that pace.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's about making it real to the customer. I think it's like we're doing it doesn't have to be planting trees. It doesn't have to be a good cause. No. It could just be you're getting some bloody awesome loyalty points. That's absolutely fine. But I think you've got to make it real for the customer. And I love that kind of, here's a picture of your tree. The idea that came to mind, I've written it down because one of our clients is doing this, is actually like, you could say to people like, we'll pay another £20 or $20 and we'll send you a framed picture of your tree. And we'll send you another picture you can pop in the frame in 10 years time if you plant a tree now. But it costs £20, but we'll put all the profit of that as well into planting a second tree. So you'll actually be a picture of two trees, one slightly bigger than the other, which I thought was amazing. And Tentree is an amazing brand, tentree.co.uk, spelled T-E-N-T-R-E-E. We've had them on the show, I think twice. We definitely had them at least once. I think we've had them on a second time. But a few years ago, their mission statement at the moment, it says we planted 105 million trees. And it says together we've planted. And underneath says we're committed to helping the planet by planting 1 billion trees by 2030. What a target. But now every single one of you listening want to go and check out their website, buy a product. It's one of the most dangerous things running a Shopify store is you find lots of other cool stores and they've all got really good marketing, really cool products.
That's what I love doing is just looking at the stores is brilliant.
Yeah, the amount of things that arrive in the office and the team are like, what now? And I'm like, oh, it's something to help me put my shoes on. Or, it's not a real thing I bought. I'm not quite at that age yet. But I bought a new razor the other day. I got completely sold to. Bought this new razor from a Shopify store and I started getting the emails saying like, day one of your new face, they put it, and it was amazing marketing. It was great. And by like day six, I replied to day six email because it wasn't a do not reply email. And I said, there's only one problem with this incredible email sequence. I'm based in the UK and I think I'm waiting for international shipping and it's not arrived yet. So they said, oh, we're very sorry, sir. Please delete those emails. We'll reset it. And I'll personally keep an eye on when the tracking arrives. And also because you're in the UK, you send a text message and it starts giving you tips on text or links to YouTube videos to go and watch, like how to shave and but they said that won't work for you. So as soon as it starts, let me know. And I'll manually send you a link to each of the videos. Just only, you know, just watch the first three before you have your first shave to get the full experience. And it made me realize that actually, and you probably see I'm very cleanly shaven today. It made me realize actually that there's so much I don't know about shaving. And going back to what we were saying right at the start, Ben, and definitely one of the USPs, but we're saying right at the start about the solution position for those guys. There's so much information that could have cluttered in straight away. I had no idea that I was now like on, I'm not on a subscription, it was a one-time purchase, but no idea I'm now in some sort of VIP club where they're teaching me about shaving. And I'll be honest, I did watch like the day five, day six video before he told me to delete them and wait for the sequence to restart. And I did watch one of them and it did say like, so you've been shaving for a few days on this new razor now. Today's probably a good day not to shave, just to let your sort of skin recover or whatever. Which also means if you wait till tomorrow, you can try a sort of 2-day growth shave and see how effective it is at that. You might need to adjust the size, the actual height of the blade and stuff like that. And I was like, this is really powerful. I'm learning. And every day I'm like telling people like, I learned last night that actually when you shave, you can get up to 1,000 ingrowing hairs. Who knew? And it's like, I'm learning all these
tips because you can see I've not been listening to the shaving piece.
Well, if my wife let me, I'd have a beard as well. There we go. Little insight into my marriage. But yeah, anyway, we're going to round things up there, I think. Really appreciate your time, Ben. And as we said right at the start, is anyone who wants to hear the other 7 tips, we're going to be covering these with a few bits of screen share and a few examples, that kind of thing. 30th of April, there'll be a link below. Sign up to our newsletter on the Winning with Shopify website as well, and you'll get invited to all of our webinars. I'm hosting one live every single month. I've got 2 more amazing guests in the diary after Ben as well, and Ben's going to be fantastic. But hope you enjoyed today's show. Your homework's to go and have a look at those 3 things and see what you can do in it. But Ben, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Nick. It's been a pleasure. Looking forward to the webinar. Like you say, the next 7 can be awesome. And yeah, everyone gets signing up. It's going to be a great couple hours.
It is indeed. And the last webinar we did about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I had to increase my Zoom license because I couldn't fit you all on the webinar as you were joining. So that was a fantastic upsell, as we've been talking about cart upsells today. But yeah, thanks again to Ben. Thanks again to all of you guys for tuning in today. Back again next Friday. So yeah, make sure you hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. And we hope to see you on the 30th of April. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can subscribe to our weekly newsletter for exclusive offers at winningwithshopify.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook group by searching for Winning with Shopify on Facebook. Over and out.